Saturday with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we've heard a lot about Eastwall this week, and another protest is to be held there this afternoon outside the old ESB building, where about 380 asylum seekers are being accommodated. There are also two separate protests planned for this weekend in your constituency of Wicklow, Stephen Matthews. And there has been unrest as well around the Direct Provision Centre in the old Grand Hotel in Wicklow Town. Taoiseach Micheál Martin said this week that the far right had yet to reach critical mass in Ireland. But are we sleepwalking into a situation where social solidarity gives way to racial tension and division in our communities? Graham Clifford is founder of Translate Ireland and also Sanctuary Runners. These are two initiatives aimed to help integrate newcomers from all over the world into communities across the country. And he joins me on the line now. Graham, you're very welcome.
Hi, good afternoon, Katie.
Graham, it's true to say, like, we have taken in thousands, but is there a difference between taking people in and welcoming them?
You know something, Katie? I have a friend from New Zealand, and she said when she came to Ireland first, she was delighted that everybody was very friendly, and they'd say, "How are you doing?" But it kind of stopped when they wouldn't kind of ask, "Do you want to come back for a cup of coffee, or do you want to come into my house?" I think sometimes, you know, that's the situation, and what we're seeing is kind of this on a macro level. A lot of people have come in, but they are not necessarily integrating into the community. And I think if we zoom out a bit, that's a big problem. Community integration is vital so that there's community resilience throughout immigration flows and that social cohesion maintains.
But, I mean, you would have, I know, a lot of friends who are currently living in direct provision. Like, what are they saying to you about what it feels like to be a visitor to this country now, or, you know, a new arrival in this country?
I suppose a lot are concerned, undoubtedly, not just for themselves and their safety, but also for their children or for others in the same situation as themselves. I'm really happy with the way you actually introduced that question. You said you have friends, and that's what they are. They're not numbers on a news bulletin. That's crucial, that respect, that individual respect and decency that we should have as a society seems to be lacking at times, you know. There are people that we care for and they care for us. And if people were seen in that light, not just as statistics, then our approach would be very different. Often when you see in a community, you know, anti-migrant sentiment or these kind of fears, some of them logical and understandable, but some of them not, you know, it's clear that often that fear is born out of a lack of connection and a presumption and something that somebody read online or read in a tabloid. And that's why community integration is so vital. If you bring people together, then you don't get these kind of whipped up jingoistic kind of groups that undoubtedly they want to spread that kind of confusion and fear. And that's what we have to really avoid in communities across the country.
I mean, obviously there will be media focus on it, and it's unavoidable actually when we saw, you know, what we're seeing in the last number of weeks. But do you get a sense on the ground that there is, a real growth in this anti-migrant sentiment?
I think that the media have a very important role to play, by the way. Sometimes I turn on the radio and I hear words used in a news bulletin, for example, and I think, you know, whoever has put that news bulletin together, sometimes they don't realize that the words that they use only feed that fear. Yesterday I heard somebody use the word surge on a news bulletin about migration. You know, we have to be aware that because of COVID-19, the migration flows for those seeking international protection would have, slowed down an awful lot, and now they've speeded up as we've lifted out of that COVID haze. But generally, I think rather than look at the issue in a kind of a fearful way, I'm hopeful that we have the strength of decency in the country to counteract any kind of coordinated growth in that anti-migrant sentiment. But we have to be so careful. As I keep saying, you know, tipping into a breakdown in any way in social solidarity or social cohesion, Katie, it threatens everything. It threatens how, it's social cohesion is vital for equity, for governance, for stability, and for decency. So it's in everybody's interests that you have that community integration. If it was only out of self-interest, Irish people should want more cohesive societies, because more cohesive communities are more welcoming and they're stronger, and everyone benefits from that.
But don't we actually, we do have a migrant integration strategy, don't we?
Yes, there is a migrant integration strategy, but it really, I mean, it is nothing more than a strategy from what I can see. It doesn't on the ground have any real impact. You know, we confuse in Ireland often, we confuse giving some funding to groups with a strategy. That's not a strategy. You know, like if an NGO or a group that's working with migrants gets a little bit of funding, it's like tick the box, there we go, we're great. In real terms, on the ground, we need a strategy that's not about migrant integration necessarily. That's placing all the onus on the migrant to integrate. We're actually confusing often integration with assimilation. What should happen is that we should be focusing squarely on community integration. And that should, by the way, that should be a part of every single government department and the public service, because immigration is not going to go away. You know, the war in Ukraine may end at some point next year, the year after, let's say, and maybe some people go back. But we know that there's a climate crisis. We know people are having to leave drought and famine in the Horn of Africa and elsewhere. So unless we wake up and as a government and a society, we understand the importance of putting in place strong supports for community integration around the country, and we listen to those who work with migrants and we listen to migrants themselves, then we're really getting into unnecessarily dangerous ground, and we don't want to repeat the same mistakes that we've seen made in places like the US and the UK and France. We're a small country. Our communities generally are strong. We can get this right.
Okay. The line isn't great there, Graham. I'll let you go, but many thanks for joining us with that. That was Graham Clifford there, founder of Sanctuary Runners and Translate Ireland. Stephen Matthews, I mentioned there, introducing Graham. There are those protests planned, as I said, in your own constituency this weekend. What are you hearing on the ground in Wicklow about direct provision, about this issue?
Sure. I suppose to put it in context as well, we're dealing with a humanitarian movement of people that none of us ever experienced in any of our lifetimes, and the figures are large. And I think Minister O'Gorman's department have done, I think they've done a fantastic job. They have done an amazing job to be able to accommodate so many people so quickly. In my own constituency in Wicklow, that social cohesion that we talked about, I have seen that in action, exemplary forms of that with groups like Wicklow Welcomes, who have worked with people in direct provision. Of a group up in Roundwood, the Road to Roundwood, who fundraised for housing for a Syrian family. And in my own town in Bray, Bray for Love, have worked with the direct provision. So that social
indeed,
cohesion...
Indeed, and it's important to acknowledge mm-hmm. all of that, of yeah. course, and it is very important.
Yeah.
But there are also protests, as I said, planned in our constituency.
There are protests, and there are quite a lot of families living in the direct provision centre in Wicklow town. And I think a lot of them were moved out, and they had integrated into the schools, they were in the sports club, they were in the voluntary groups, they were in tidy towns, and there was a lot of concern raised about that. And that's one of the really upsetting things about where, you know...
Sorry, are you saying that the protests are in support of people in direct provision, or am I writing this protest of people who are concerned about the numbers of people who are being placed in Wicklow?
Yeah, I think there's been concern expressed around all of those issues about, you know, overcrowding in conditions, various different aspects of direct provision. Like, direct provision is not a good system. It's another one of those reasons that we went into government to end the direct provision system.
And in fairness, the pledges on that have kind of fallen very... We appreciate circumstances have changed in the time you've there.
Sure.
But I mean,
it was a priority for us. You heard
Graham Clifford there. We are going to be on dangerous ground unless we prioritise integration in communities, from the communities inwards, not expecting people who turn up to be able to do all the work themselves.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I was trying to say. The examples that I have seen of that in Bray and in Wicklow have been exemplary.
They're on the ground thing. This is not a... Surely the government should be... This should be a government-led strategy. This should not be something you're depending on voluntary groups to come up with.
And government does lead on that. And Minister O'Gorman did meet with Wicklow Welcomes this week to try and kind of deal with some of the concerns that were raised and to try and improve the situation there in Wicklow.
Breed Smith, you want to get in there?
Yeah, I do want to come in because I think what we're really seeing here is a sort of a perfect storm of many crises coming together. Housing, we've talked about. There's also a health crisis. There's also education crisis. There's all sorts of reasons. And people are fearful in the back of their heads about war and about climate change and the disasters that might be facing them. So there's all these crises going on and people are fearful in their heads. And then when somebody like the far right, like the Freedom Party or one of these far right groups puts out a small bit of truth, a bus arrived last night with 40 odd people going into a direct provision centre and they're from the Congo and Somalia and small bit of truth, all that's true. And then a pile of lies. They're a threat to your community. These men are a danger. They're single men. They're a danger. They're an invasion on us and they're a danger to your children and women and we have to do something about it. That takes off in people's heads. A small bit of truth and a ton of lies. And the only way to deal with that is to deal with the crisis. And for us as community leaders to bring people onto the march today, for example, on the Raise the Roof campaign, to direct the anger that rightly exists against those who rule us and those who control society, to direct it in their direction, not to kick down. And I'm always saying to people, please don't kick down, look up and blame those who are responsible for all of the problems that we are facing in society. And that way we can see solutions. So, for example, I know of a project in the North Inner City where they are bringing men out of direct provision and teaching them a bit more English every day, but also teaching them so that they can pass their safe pass test. And they're getting jobs on building sites. And these people want to work. Yeah. And we need to give them the right to work. We're short of workers in every sphere. We're short of bus drivers, absolutely, nurses, yeah, care workers, builders. Yeah. Give them the right to work. They contribute to society. They pay taxes. And they'd be much more welcome and integrated.
I just want to bring in Martin Kenny. I mean, people will remember, like, you took a stand in support of asylum seekers in your constituency in 2019. And for your troubles, you got death threats. Your car was burnt out. Like, so you've first-hand experience of how volatile this can be.
And I am delighted to report that there are 25 families living in what is wonderful apartments in Ballinamore. They are integrated into the community. They're playing football with the local GAA club, the kids. There's people coming to me that were badly led and were on the protest saying, you know, we want to keep this family here now because we're afraid they'll leave. You know, it has been a success. And anywhere that people have gone, in general, they have been decent, hard working, tried to get on. The only problem we have are people who object to them, in general. And I understand, and I think we all have to understand, that the problem we have in Ireland is that we have very intense competition for services. We have intense competition for health services, for people, GPs, for operations in hospitals, for our schools, for SNAs. We have intense competition for all those things. And when a small community that find themselves under pressure and are worried and concerned, often communities that are in quite impoverished positions as well, see more people come and they see that competition intensifying. And that's what...
But it's not an imagined concern. I'm going to find it harder to get my child a GP's appointment, to get all the things that you know isn't
hard.
What do you say to them when
government says that they're going to put in, you know, extra assistance for them? There's no good in saying we're going to give a grant to the local community centre for $2,000 for something. What they need to be doing is saying we're going to have GP services. We're going to enhance to make sure that there's enough of SNAs in the schools. Like, I'll give you an example. There's a whole pile of Ukrainians came very, very welcome to Bundoran. One of them that was there was a qualified medical doctor. She is now this week going to Belfast to get her papers so that she can practice in that town and help that community who have got a shortage of GPs. And in many of the people who have came, particularly from Ukraine in recent years, have been people who have got a lot of skills that we need in this country. And in a lot of the places where we have what would traditionally be called low skilled labour, we also need people to do that work as well. So it's all a positive if we can work it right.
They're very positive stories, obviously, and it is great to hear that Ballinamore have now, you know, welcomed those families that had been the source of such angst just 3 years ago. But there is no doubt about that. It's not just a concern that'll disappear once people settle in. No. Like, the concerns will be realised. There will be more, you know, it will be harder to get those. Are you saying to people, well, you just have to put up with that for the time
being?
Well,
no, I think the government has a job to do to communicate clearly with communities. And that has not happened very well, in fairness.
And again, communities will tell you communication is one thing, but it doesn't give you another GP or it doesn't give you SNA for
and,
your
and that's
plan.
And that's what they need to do. They need to make sure that they can provide those services. Now, we know it can't be instant, but there needs to be a plan in place to provide services in any community that's taking new people into them.
Can I just say to you, Stephen Matthews, your own party colleague, Roderick O'Gorman, God no, he's got a lot on his plate. He had a lot on his plate before this blew up into the massive crisis that it now is. Is it too much? Like, should the Green Party be asking for, you know, other ministers to come in and shoulder more of this burden? Particularly now we're having a reshuffle. There's going to be a rejig at the top of government. Will you be looking for that? Will you be looking for more support for Roderick O'Gorman? Because is it feasible that one minister should be dealing with particularly issues that should never have, you would imagine, have been part of his brief?
Yeah, look, Roderick's workload is immense, and I think he has done a really good job on a number of things that have come to him. He is cooperating and working with Minister Dara O'Brien on the housing issues and the housing provision issues. But there's no doubt about it. It is a heavy workload he has. And, you know, I said the figure at the outlet, I think 60,000, 70,000 to try and accommodate really quickly. And speed, you know, sometimes speed has been of the essence there. Now, I always think that local communities and towns, they should always know what's going on in the towns. Like, everybody wants to know what's going on. And I think there has been cases where there hasn't been that consultation or even information going out, and they have acted. I think that's in situations where they've had to act at speed. But I really do think that works. Public consultation have always been a firm support.
But is that not a symptom or a fallout from the fact that there's just too much happening in Roderick O'Gorman's desk?
No,
and
I think
that should he just give away some of his responsibilities to other departments that may have more resourcing?
I would absolutely trust Roderick O'Gorman to deal with this situation, this humanitarian crisis. I've known Roderick for 20 years. There's nobody
I would trust. Needs more resources.
I think he's gotten more resources, but I would actually trust him and known him personally and known his complete commitment to the job that he does. Everybody's support is always welcome from across all political parties and spectrums as well.
And in fairness, I think the final thing to say on this is there has been in Leinster House support from everybody, and everybody has worked together to ensure that people who come here are made welcome. But we do need to get it right.
I think you're right on that, Mark.
Okay, we'll take a break.